Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Podcast. I am Matt.
And I am Ez. Friends, welcome back. We are covering The Sorcerer's Stone, our movie review. We're going to dive into this. It's good to be back, you know?
Yes.
I like this movie a lot.
Yeah, you know, it's The Sorcerer's Stone everywhere, unlike the book, which is The Philosopher's Stone in England. We lucked out on this one. Sorry, guys. While Harry Potter may take place in England and, you know, all that stuff. You know where Hollywood is, Ez?
It's, yes, I do, my friend.
Yeah, that'd be in the United States.
S of A, baby.
Let's go. That's what I'm talking about here.
Oh, my gosh. That's a good point. I never thought about that. It is actually Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
It is the Sorcerer's Stone. We won on that one.
Like, is there anywhere else? I'm just doing a quick little search. Like,
sorry. Yeah. Sorry, England. It's just how it works. Yeah. America wins. Okay. We won in, you know, 1776, won in 1812, and we won here with Harry Potter.
Holy smokes. By the
now
way,
now we're allies and we're buddies. Okay. But
Good.
July 4th is just right around the corner, and I'm getting amped up.
That's also Matt's birthday, like right around July, early July. So,
right.
He's a history guy, so just bear with us, guys. He didn't mean to alienate half of our listenership there, you know.
I did, actually.
Okay, you did. I'm trying to bring you guys back in. I'm kidding. No, I'll be rooting for England, you know, soon here, and we have the World Cup coming up this fall. Actually, it'll be kind of fun.
Oh yeah, that'll be cool.
Yeah. Did you see, by the way, quick random aside here, Ukraine beat Scotland the other day to get in the World
Cup. I think they just won today. I just got some ESPN update about Ukraine winning.
Oh my gosh. Good for it's just kind of cool to see. There's a couple of those to be determined spots that are that are still possible.
No, Ukraine just lost.
Oh, they lost. Well, they won versus Scotland. Are they in or are they not?
They lost. I don't know. They just lost. They lost to Wales.
Okay. Gotcha.
All right. Is that what FT means? Is that final score? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Not necessarily a soccer guy. Somebody's probably so pretty.
Now, hold on. Isn't Wales part of the United Kingdom?
Dude, don't even get me started on this.
Lottie in here. She knows. She's from over there.
Right. So exactly. So there's England is in, but not in the
United Kingdom.
England is its own country.
It's like England, Scotland, Wales, right?
Wales. Let me look them all up here.
And then Northern Ireland, but not Ireland.
Yeah. Our friend Becky, who's over there in, she's not in the UK, right? Which is what she's made very, very clear to us. Always makes fun of us for this because she's sort of like, how do you guys not know, you know, what's I'm like, come on, they don't teach us this. We don't know. Yeah. So Scotland, Wales, England, and then Northern Ireland. Yeah. You're gotcha. Right.
Okay. Wales is, yeah, it's on the west side.
Jeez, dude. There. Look at the map though. Scotland is huge.
Scotland's pretty big. Okay.
Scotland is huge. It is the whole north. I mean, it is the North Kingdom.
But how big?
Oh, what happened? Oh my gosh, guys, we just lost Matt. He's just bounced on me. He apparated away. I continued on. I was like,
I clicked the wrong button, man. Sorry,
Matt got so excited. He literally apparated out of here.
I don't know how I did that. I meant to click out, and I clicked the wrong thing. Anyway, I was trying to see just how big is the United Kingdom compared to, like, you know, the United States. I think it's like the size of, like, Indiana, right? So
no,
right?
Come on, hold on a second. Hold on a second. United Kingdom.
Hold on. I'm pretty sure. Dude, it is. It is literally the size of, like, I mean, it's like, it's kind of like Missouri plus Iowa. So it's like two states.
Yeah, I see it. I see people kind of moving it around. Wow. Holy
shit. But that means that Scotland is like the size of Indiana. In fact, Indiana might be bigger.
Right. So, yeah, Scotland is pretty big. Somebody's done, like, okay. Yeah, they've just taken it and drug it over the United States for us to compare, because, like, Ohio is almost as big.
You could drive through the entire United Kingdom. Well, I don't think you can't drive over to, can you? Is there a bridge? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, over to, I don't know if there's a.
But you could drive the
from Scotland to England,
Wales, England, Scotland, the whole thing in one day.
Now, again, we're thinking of like our good old fashioned highways, right? Our I-71.
Do they have a freeway over there? Or?
I don't know if they've got anything, because when I was
cobblestone, there, like, what?
You gotta get a wagon, bro. It's just, I'm kidding. People are gonna be so mad. Oh, I'm sorry, guys.
We just okay. Well, all right. Enough of good old bashing the UK. But let's dive into Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, the movie here, as just sort of, you know, our thoughts on it. We finished the book, and now it's time to talk about the movie, man. I mean, you know, just sort of first time seeing it. What do we think? Where do we think it stands today? What do we like about it? What's, you know, some of the favorite parts? Just a whole big breakdown, man. When did you see this? What was the first time you remember seeing it?
Oh, gosh. I think it was.
Did you see it in theater?
I did not, because I remember this.
You weren't allowed.
I was not allowed to go see it in theater. And I swear to God, I was in the group that, like, you know, classrooms had read it as sort of a thing. Yeah. I had an alternative reading, and my mom, I had an alternative because she wanted to read it first. Right. If she hadn't read it first, she was one of those moms who was like, I'm not going to start anything with the school. But I hear witchcraft going on in this book. And I just want to make sure that, like, you know, this is not going to turn my son to the devil. Amen. All right. So she kind of, all those kids got to go on a field trip, and I had to stay at school. That was me. I was that kid. All of Mount Vernon, like, middle school, got to go. And Ez and about two or three other students who didn't have their permission slip signed, or who were told they can't go by their parents, stayed at home. But it was shortly after, though, because I remember seeing it just a few years later in early high school. So,
right.
Yeah, because it came out when we were in middle
school. We would have been in like 6th, 7th grade, something around there.
Yeah. Exactly. So anyways, I remember watching it later when it came out. And I do remember kind of just being a little bit older, like as a teenager, just to kind of say, like, I think my mom even might have said, you shouldn't be watching that. You know what I mean? And I was sort of like, whatever. And then they all ended up watching it and loving it. My dad loves it. He goes and watches Fantastic Beasts, you know, the whole thing. You know, people are just sort of cautious. Actually, great kind of connection to the D&D Stranger Things season 4, where they're all like, it's a cult, right? I mean, anybody who's playing this Hellfire Club at Hawkins, you know, parents are concerned about it. That's kind of how my parents were for a hot second. So, but now I'm a full on wizard. Okay, so dealing in the dark arts. Okay. So yeah, for me it was probably in high school. I don't remember the exact time, but I remember it being a thing that my good buddy Tom, this guy, I swear to God, Tom, we would have the get a cake, right? I'm embarrassed to even say this, and I can't. I'm gonna text him after this and tell him I told this story. We used to go over, and I don't know. Tom just had a comfort level where he would just kind of like, he just doesn't care what anybody thinks, you know. And he would just be like, anybody want to watch like Beauty and the Beast? And I'm just,
I know like, he doesn't care at all.
It's just so crazy. So I remember we watched Harry Potter though. It was one of our things because his sister was super into it, and it was always on when I went over there. So that was kind of funny. But yeah, what about you? Did you watch it when it came out in the theater, or was it later?
No, I didn't see it in theater. I remember watching it, actually my niece. So I have like two brothers that are quite a bit older than me, like 8 and 10 years older than me.
Yeah.
So my brother Jake, his second daughter, she was like, I don't know, 4 or 5 or whatever. And so we were watching her. And so I'm probably like, I don't know, 11 or something. And I have a niece that's like, yeah, you know, 3 or 4 or whatever. Right. Just because like the age difference. And he had like a kid at like 16, you know, so it's like the way it all sort of ends up working out. I don't know. I don't even know the exact math on it, but whatever. She was like really into it. And so it was like, I want to watch Harry Potter. I was like, okay, well, so we put on Harry Potter and I watched the first movie. So I saw the first movie like a bunch of times. And then I didn't touch Harry Potter until when you came out, when I moved to Portland the first time around, like 2008. Oh, yeah. That's when I like got into it. But so I'd seen the first movie a bunch of times without reading the books or anything. But I mean, the first movie, man, I mean, it's great. I mean, it's, you know, when you start to rank the movies, I mean, it's up there because it did so well at sort of establishing Hogwarts, showing you this new world that we're about to, you know, embark in and everything. And it just has so many iconic sort of moments in the series. I would say that if you're going to reference anything from the Harry Potter series and pop culture, a lot of it comes from the first movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. It does. Yeah. I mean, that's like when we quote it or we think about some of those things, it's definitely, like one of those areas where we go back to the original. It has all the feels. It's got the Christmas scene, you know, it's got all the, it's your first time going to Hogwarts. It has all the emotions, even though it's not maybe the most like exciting stuff with tons of magic or whatever. It's like magical in the fact that you're in the wizarding world and you're in Diagon Alley and you're at this magical castle. Like, yeah, they're still learning how to do some spells. And when they do a couple of them, especially as a young kid, when you watch them unlock a door with like, you know, Alohomora, you're like, okay, I'm going to go try that. You know, as I said, 11-year-old, you're like, I'm going to go we'll see if that works. So yeah, it does a lot of those things. And then you really felt this friendship, you know, it's a story about friendship and those are the best ones. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely has all the feels, and I feel like it's like you said, as you rank it, it's got to be in the top because it's unlike, you know, when we talk about Star Wars and like A New Hope or whatever, where maybe I would like, it's not as, I don't know, it's still the first one. It's what starts it all. So you kind of always have to, it has to have that special spot there because it starts everything and it's a good enough hook that it gets you into the next movies and so on. But yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, I love it. You know, I said fantastic. It's better than all the Fantastic Beast movies, that's for sure.
Oh, definitely.
Right? If not one of the Harry Potter movies, yeah.
So. Yeah, Sorcerer's Stone for me is, I think you have that in the top three, you know. Yeah. I think for a lot of people it's gonna be their number one, but I feel like it's gotta be in the top. Now, if you include the Fantastic Beast movies, it's like, what, the top, there's 8 plus 3, so that's 11. So, yeah, so it's in the top 3 of 11 for me. I still probably have 6 and 5 above it just because I like those movies so much more.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably my ranking. It's probably 6, 5, 3, or 1, excuse me.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's one that, you know, think about what they had to do, too. Like, they had to establish what Diagon Alley looked like. All of it. Yeah.
Right.
You know, you have to establish what your cast, and it was perfectly cast. I mean, you had all the older wizards. You know, one of the genius strokes to this is like Maggie Smith, right? Being Professor McGonagall, these seasoned actors who are really good helping these kids and being a supporting kind of cast around your trio. And as they grow up, it just made it so much better. Like, that was a genius move, is to have really well-established people in those roles. So, and then, yeah, Hogwarts looks sick, you know?
Well, you know, I think this book is probably the easiest book to movie adaptation. One, because the book is not very like difficult to sort of adapt. I really feel like they didn't actually have to cut that much out of it. Like, Peeves gets cut out, right? And like the way they do the sorting is a little different. You know, they're not singing the Sorting Hat song, and, you know, like a lot of this other stuff, but most of it's honestly, God, pretty straightforward, straight from the book. And I didn't have the benefit of reading the books first to sort of imagine what these characters would have sort of looked like. But if you go back and you look at the original artwork and everything, I mean, God, it looks just like Daniel. Nailed
it. Did a good job. Right. Yeah, I pulled up a few things that were like, you know, differences between book and show and some of these other behind the scenes things, which I'll bring up in a second because they're kind of fun. But I don't recall whether I think I watched the movie first in high school in the shortly like 9th or 10th grade. And then I went and got the book and read it and then continued on from there and read those. And in college, I would always do kind of like a audio, just re-listen, you know, as I was driving to student teaching and teaching. But yeah, I mean, because it's like it. So I went into it with having seen Diagon Alley and Hogwarts and all that kind of stuff.
Same.
With those characters in mind, actually. And that was fun.
Oh, I should say. Yeah. Because I went into the books. So I went into the books with the show characters. You know?
That's what I meant. Sorry.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I probably said it wrong, but yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, you know, I think that this movie is also one of the ones that's paced the best, just because it's like, it's very simple, very like straightforward, and just nails all the action scenes and everything like that. And so that's why it makes it such an iconic, great movie. You know, the other thing is, oddly enough, I think this movie probably has the most of the Dursleys in it.
Yeah.
Compared to the other movies. And I think that it just works as such a great setup.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You mean with the. What do you mean? Just with the Dursleys in the beginning?
Yeah, I think that you know, even for just if you just look at the movies, that I felt like they really like spent their time to establish the Dursleys.
Oh, okay, yeah,
which then sort of serves as like a backdrop, because then like they sort of get lost. You sort of don't see them as much in the movies,
right? I get you
when you progress forward, like especially like God, man, some of the stuff that like happens towards the end, like they cut out. Like of the Dursleys and like knowing a lot of the information they actually know and stuff like that, that doesn't make it into the movies, which kind of sucks. But I really like this one shows, I mean, kind of the whole deal, the cup, like being in the cupboard under the stairs. We go to the zoo, we go to the island, right, where Hagrid's there. It's honestly, it's like the first like 10-15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, that's a good point, because as you said,
they let it play out, which is good.
Yeah. And later on, you don't have to do as much because you did a lot of that work in the first movie. So we understand who they are, the atmosphere that he's going into, and you don't really have to do a whole lot of plot points or whatever to make that kind of matter as much, except for, what was it? Which one was it where when the Dementors show up and Mrs. Fig shows, like that was really cool because they had a moment where with Dudley and everything, you know. So, but yeah, you're right. It's like as it goes along, I actually wish they would have done more, and I wish there were an extended edition to some of these things. I know the first several have some extended, you know, moments and parts, but like towards the end, I actually would love to have seen more of the Dursley stuff. Really,
right? I know,
just because in the books it's kind of cool. Like, and that's what's really neat is when you go to read them, you're like, holy crap, there's like so much stuff that he deals with and wrestles with, and there's a whole setup him thinking about what's going to be happening later, like dreams and stuff that happen. So
to me my favorite thing about the Dursleys, I mean, it doesn't happen in this movie, but at the very end where you find out that Mrs. Dursley actually knows a lot more than she's letting on, over this whole year, like she's actually known quite a bit, you know, about it and all this stuff, like like a super, I love that moment in the books. So let's talk about the castings, right?
Yeah,
like I mean, I feel like they just sort of nailed it. Like every single casting was like perfect.
I'm with you 100%. They got all the Weasleys right, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Weasley. I mean, like, again, we're talking like not the first. This is just the only way to see Mrs. Weasley, but like, they nail that. They nail Ron, Harry, Hermione,
Snape.
Snape is awesome.
Malfoy.
Right. So Richard Harris, who plays Dumbledore, this is interesting. I have a couple of these pulled up.
The original Dumbledore.
Yeah, the original one. He also looks great and is awesome, but he does turn the role down, I guess, apparently 3 times. And he says it was because he wasn't up for all the sequels and was like spending his twilight years doing all this work in the sequels. He was kind of done, you know, and it was his granddaughter who loved the book so much that persuaded him when she found out to take the role, threatened to never talk to him again, you know, as a little granddaughter or whatever. Right. And so he's sort of like, he's starting to see then how much this is impacted the community and says, okay, I guess I'll be in it, you know? So yeah. Cause that's always fun when you hear stories from actors who their kids are like, dad, you've got to be in it, or mom, you got to do it. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, I mean, he's perfectly cast actually. They went after him several times.
Especially for, and obviously he dies before the series can finish. I don't know that he would have been great down the line though. Because he's already pretty old. And then how are you going to show him doing some... How would you show that actor if he had done the whole thing? How would you have done, you know?
It would have been tough. It would have been tough. You would have had doubles or do weird different angles where they did more stuff. And again, that was the point. Twilight of his years. They didn't want to...
Yeah, I do love him in one. And in the second one, he's not there. He's just not in it as much.
Right.
But I don't know. He does give. Because I guess, you know, like the books sort of shift to the way Dumbledore starts, because he is perfectly cast for the first Dumbledore, which is like this really old, like wizard who's like funny and kind of goofy and, you know, like flamboyant, I guess, like almost to kind of describe him, this like grandfatherly sort of figure. Before he turns into this sort of mysterious, like, soldier, you know, general almost, right? So I do think he was really perfectly cast for that first movie. I like it different. It's almost like in my head canon, I think I just sort of view it as like that's how Harry views him. And then like his perception of him changes. Those things get darker. It's kind of a weird way to think about it, but.
No, but yeah, I get that's total headcanon stuff, you know, thinking through, you know, how does it work because we have this shift. It does not. I mean, you don't really miss a beat exactly. Like it really,
I know, it's
he does such a good job. Like the transition is so good.
Like the difference between different Dumbledores compared to the difference between different Grindelwalds is totally different. But you can't compare like Johnny Depp to, you know, like some they're way different,
right? So like, yeah, Richard Harris to Michael Gambon is a good, you know, like they still had the same demeanor, the same sort of they looked the part and everything, so
they sort of take their time with it too, because when I rewatched them all to get ready for Fantastic Beasts, the second movie he's not in it as much, and then Michael Gambon isn't in the third one as much. So really, it's kind of like by the time you get to the fourth one, you're ready for Dumbledore to step back on stage, which he does.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Which is great, and then when he's more prevalent in Goblet and everything. So yeah. He was perfectly cast. Who else? So. The kids, by the way, all the kids really grow into their roles, and they do an amazing job. Because you've got Seamus there in the beginning, you've got Dean Thomas there.
Neville
is huge, by the way, which is awesome. Here's one I want to give a shout out to him. So let's see if I find him again. Harry Melling is Dudley Dursley. Okay, look this guy up. Look up Harry Melling.
Why is he like? Is he like a stud today or something?
Yeah, it looks totally. He still looks like him, but he's just Dudley grown up, and it's fascinating.
Oh wow, just weird to look at him. He's also a lot skinnier now too.
Yeah, a whole lot skinnier. Just a more kind of like I could see him another stuff, and he would probably look, you know, awesome. Yeah, he's. I'm trying to look. He's been in. Has he been in Doctor Who or he's been, you know, a couple episodes here or there or something? I don't know. So But just kind of funny to see how these guys grew up or whatever, because he was a perfect, perfect Dudley back in the day. So, and so, because you mentioned Neville, right?
Now, listen here, Potter.
Oh,
it's like a picture of him and some, like, he's like holding a gun, like,
something
today. But it's like, now, listen here, Potter. Like,
oh, that's hilarious. Let me see who else was in here. It's so funny to go back and look at these individuals. Who, I mean, Maggie Smith was by far the best. I mean, Professor, you know,
as McGonagall.
I mean, yeah, just straight up was 100% amazing. Also, I think Emma Watson was probably, I think, a more spot on casting for Hermione than even Daniel Radcliffe. I know Daniel Radcliffe is really spot on, but
right,
you know, Emma just grows into that role. Like, and I mean, Rupert is Ron. Like, he talks about that
as
his Ron, dilemma.
He that might be the, in all honesty, that might be the best casting of the entire thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
because if you mess that one up,
yeah,
like, because it's like Harry actually is kind of like quiet, really. I mean, that's, and true, like,
mm-hmm,
he's sort of like, you sort of see all of these events like happening with him.
Right.
Whereas like Ron and Hermione are, your Ron and Hermione casting, I would say, was more important than your Harry casting, as crazy as it sounds.
No, I get you on that, because they provide a lot more. They do stuff that he reacts to. You know what I mean? Like, they have to be right in it, like whether it's being clever and knowledgeable or whatever the thing, you know, Hermione's doing. And Ron provides so much comic relief that it's
yeah, because Harry's always in. Because Harry's always like actually doing a lot of the action, and then it's kind of like Dragon Ball, like, in a way. It's kind of like, it's like in Dragon Ball, right? Like, they're sitting there fighting, right? And it's like you're watching these like two like super powerful guys like fight back and forth, or you think like superheroes or something. But then it cuts to the side, and it's people watching the fight that are actually telling you like what's going on. Because Harry's playing Quidditch, Harry's doing, you know, all this stuff, and like Harry also doesn't know, especially in the first movie, what any of this stuff is. And so you always divert to Ron and Hermione, who have to then explain what's happening. Ron's like, oh, that's the portrait, you know, candy, and he sticks his head out. He's not gonna wait around all day, is he? Yeah, right. Whereas like Harry's like, oh. So the Ron casting, I'd say, is, the Ron and Hermione are both great, but I would say that the Ron was probably the most important and also most well done casting.
Yeah, because that's his mate, right? That's his best mate, and they're together in the boys' dormitory. They're always together, and Hermione is sort of that third wheel for a while there, right? And then it turns into Harry as the third wheel. But so no, I'm with you 100%. That's huge. I mean, you had to get Ron correct. So yeah, the other ones, just going through some of these, because again, this is the first time we see all of these people. The
Filch
is great. Yes, 100% there. Hagrid is perfectly cast as well too. So Robbie Coltrane is awesome. I even thought, like, it's so funny now, because you look at them and they just so embody these characters that it's like
characters.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of go back and I don't know. People sometimes will go look at the book description, and then they'll look at like the way they, you know, they act. Like, Harry's supposed to be a lot taller than Daniel is or whatever, but we don't care, because he looks like him and he embodies his spirit and stuff, you know? So,
not just in this movie, but in the entire series, I really cannot think of a bad casting.
Right. Right.
That I can think of.
My favorite one is Slughorn. My favorite one of all time, but then even Lockhart in the next movie. Talking Sorcerer's Stone, but these are all like, you know, really great moves as you go along. So the original cast is so solid, and then you just build upon it, and it's just like they're hitting home runs.
Yeah. What if you have to pick one thing, what's your favorite part of the first movie?
Oh my gosh, that is tough. I don't know, because I so much love Diagon Alley. I love when they're there getting sorted. It's class. It is when they go to class. That's the best way to say it, because everything's this whole setup. You're like, okay, the Vernon stuff is interesting. The Dursleys, Hagrid showing up. I know that's like people's like, you're a wizard, Harry, famous moment or whatever. But for me, when I really pay attention to most in this is when they go to class and when they're in there together. I'm looking at all the students because he's in a classroom learning about magic. And it's just all like they're talking about the library. I guess you could also even, it's so weird because I could just say Hogwarts in general. And it's like, because there's like the Great Hall, but it really is class where they start to kind of talk about stuff and you start to learn about some of the magic and stuff. And then I say that though, but then there's like moments where in the Great Hall, they discuss a lot of stuff and things are knowledge is passed
down. The CG in this movie also still holds up really well today.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Nothing feels like weird or out of place or whatever. They used to like Hogwarts all looks good. The troll looks good. You know,
the troll's a little, the troll's like the only thing that's like a little weird, but other than that, it's like the rest
Quidditch
of it
looks holds great. Up.
Yeah. The score, obviously. I mean, that was incredibly important. You nail that Harry Potter theme. That's going to stick around forever. As well as the intro too, like the lightning coming down and everything. Sort of just everything they did with the production elements and everything of this movie still holds up well today, which is why it's probably the most watched of the movies.
Yeah,
I think if people are like, because it's on NBC, like, you know, every 2 minutes, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, for me, I think my favorite part of the first movie, let me think here, if I really have to sort of narrow it down, I don't know why, it's super cheesy, but I just like the line, not me, you.
Oh my god.
It's just like so ridiculous.
It is like, over the top,
but it's like little, it's like these little kids. It's almost like you could almost still imagine that scene as like two kids like playing like with toys and thinking like they're doing something super epic, but they are actually doing something epic.
right, but it's on kid level, you know. It's still really right. God, yeah, not me, not Hermione, you. Yeah, it's so ridiculous.
So ridiculous.
Yeah, there's a couple of those moments because I thought, you know, I think a lot of people would say they really like Christmas. That's always been a thing, the big holiday, right? They love that the Christmas scene is super important. And then, like I said, the Hagrid in the beginning, Diagon Alley, all that kind of stuff it has so many big, good moments that it's hard to kind of pick. Because for me, it's the whole experience of Hogwarts. That's just all melded together and you're like, geez, cow, like they're going to class, they're in the Great Hall, they're playing Quidditch, and then they have this big adventure with Fluffy and they're going down to Hagrid's hut. You know, it's like there's so many cool things to it that it's hard to really land on one thing. When they're sneaking into
very
library,
it's huge. A very well I would say the movie is almost more well paced than the book, and the book is very well paced, but the movie is just a bear. It's so like, it never feels too fast. It never feels too slow.
Right.
Just well done across the board.
Yeah, no, it's one of the best. Let me pull up a couple of these different things here. Some of the differences, you know, let me do some of the behind the scenes stuff here first too. So, it's crazy to think how different this could have been. I was reading some stuff where they wanted, director Christopher Columbus requested to film at Canterbury Cathedral, was denied. So let's see. He originally planned on converting the famous cathedral into Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. So like, you think about how different it could have been, so there's something. I did also, as I was scrolling through here, found the whole religious backlash. All right. So this was definitely largely in the religious community when this movie came out. It was highly criticized. It's so funny to think back to that time when people were like out on this movie. Steven Spielberg was once sort of like
considered,
yeah, to direct it and stuff. Yeah.
I know, because, you know, oddly enough, like Chris Columbus is a director who, like, when people sort of, he hasn't really done that much. Like, to be honest, like when you look at a lot of these directors, it's like people who have always done like, you know, a million movies and stuff like that. But like, you just sort of look at his list here. Right. So he did like Gremlins. He did The Goonies. You keep going down. He did Home Alone, Home Alone 2, Mrs. Doubtfire. That's the one I always actually think of first. And he did Harry Potter 1 and 2. And he did, and really he did, he hasn't really done a lot since that. He's produced some stuff. Jingle All the Way. Then he was sort of producer for another Harry Potter, for Prisoners of Azkaban. He was a producer. But then, you know, just a little bit stuff here and there.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
I would say kind of an interesting choice, but I think, you know, also being the director of the Goonies, I think that kind of works. I can see the direct correlation of like the Goonies to Harry Potter.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. 100%. Something else, I'm just learning some stuff here as we kind of scroll through this. So the Great Hall actually stunk. It smelled. This is Warwick Davis, who is Professor Flitwick, which is amazing because he, right. his actual physical character changes. It's still the same actor, but they change, like, they give him a younger look.
Right.
Yeah. Which I think it's fine. But they said that they during the feast scene in the Great Hall, the food is actually real. And it wasn't uncommon for the food to be left out for days at a time. Like, what? So like, correct. as they did scenes there, they might do like one, okay, cool, let's just leave this here for tomorrow, come back to it, and it would just be sitting there.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
That's gross. That's super gross.
I mean, Ron was eating some of those, you know, chicken legs, man.
Well, I'm sure they gave him.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. So look at how many awards this thing was like nominated for. So the actual Academy Awards, right, which is the Oscars, art design, costume design, and original score, didn't really win that many. It was nominated for quite a bit of stuff. So actual awards it won, of like things that I'm actually even familiar with, like Empire Awards, nothing there. So a lot of a Saturn Award. So like, I don't know, it won some like lower level stuff, but it was pretty much, it's all like editing, art directing, visual effects was what it was sort of across the board. Cause this released in what, 2001. So I'm trying to think, I guess what else came out in 2001 that would have been going up against.
Yeah.
But I mean, box office, $1 billion.
Yeah, that's huge. Well, you just mentioned costume and makeup. I was thinking like Gringotts Bank, you know, they did such a good, they hit a home run with the goblins as you walk in there and stuff, and all the different creatures. So
yeah, it is the second highest grossing, and of course some of that $1 billion has been in re-releases, so like it adds into the box office for this whole thing. But it's the second highest grossing Harry Potter movie behind Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Oh, really? Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. I didn't know, yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, that's kind of amazing. And it should have won more awards because it's, I mean, God, it's so good. I don't know. I feel like these kids do a great job in acting. Like, I don't feel like it's really, you know, sometimes you have child actors and it kind of feels like a little whatever. There's some awkward moments, but overall they did a great job and there was like a good supporting kind of adult cast around him. So,
well, I'll tell you why it didn't do better in the awards ceremony.
Yeah. Who is it going up against?
So other movies of that sort of year included Shrek, Monsters Ball, which did really well. Ali, that movie did well. Harry Potter, Sorcerer's Stone is in there. Pearl Harbor, Black Hawk Down, A Beautiful Mind, Moulin Rouge, but then the big one was Fellowship of the Ring. So I was like,
oh,
nah, yeah. So I was like, nothing beat that. Yeah. Like, because all three Lord of the Rings movies just like have like record category for most. I mean, Return of the King is tied with, I think it's like Titanic, Ben-Hur, and one other movie that's, I always forget. But they're like most Academy Awards ever in a single year.
Right, right. Okay. Wow.
At like 16. It's absurd. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy though, because I still kind of have, like, I know that those were masterpieces and everything, that Lord of the Rings was amazing, well done. It's this, Tolkien had such a huge fandom or whatever. But I don't know. I feel like these Harry Potter movies are, I mean, years from now, man, I think these things still are pulling in a huge audience and they're still standing the test of time. I mean, so does Lord of the Rings, but like, it's cool. That's a really, That's interesting. A couple other interesting behind the scenes things here. Did you know Robin Williams wanted to play Hagrid? He like wrote in a little punch. Yeah, he actually wrote to Chris Columbus, and then they had a strict British only. It was a very local. They wanted it to be a whole British cast to support British actors and stuff like that. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
I don't know, man. That might have been the thing that might have been the thing. Because after that, Robin Williams started doing really sort of depressing, weird movies.
Oh, I know.
What if that was the thing that sent him down the path?
Gosh, you couldn't have made one exception. No one would have known. He has a great accent. You know, he could have done all sorts of things with that character. It's funny to see that he wanted to play. Like,
when I mean, obviously, it's so iconic.
Yeah.
Right. And Hagrid. And, but would Robin Williams and have been better? Guy,
but yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like,
probably
a bit more funny and stuff. Yeah, maybe because Hagrid's pretty level. He kind of like, messing up here and there makes it funny with the kids and stuff. But I don't know how Robin Williams would have done it. You know, it's interesting to think about how different that would have been. You know.
Yeah.
Another.
I did not know that. Oh yeah, keep going.
Yeah, these are kind of cool. So J.K. Rowling always knew that Alan Rickman would play Severus Snape. She handpicked him. So that was one of the things that she full on went in there with all of her guns ablazing and said, no, he's going to be, I want him to be the guy. I've shared information with him about Snape's character, where I'm going with it and all that kind of stuff. So that's pretty cool.
John Cleese too, like, even though it's a tiny little part, but as nearly had Nick. I mean, John Cleese is like, I mean, dude, he's so many like big, I mean, he's in like, you know, Monty Python, like all sorts. I mean, he's, you know.
It's so funny that you say that, because just last night I was doing for Up Talking Tolkien a little rewatch of all of the movies, you know, just trying to get ready for just keeping that project alive, if you will, for the time being. And I made the mistake of saying, I looked up, what's his name, Billy Connolly. And if you look up Billy Connolly, he looks exactly like nearly headless Nick with this little goatee and stuff. And I mixed up Billy Connolly with John Cleese. And I'm like, I don't know actors. It's, you know, I kind of forget their names and stuff. But that was huge. Nearly had this Nick was a big deal. And that's one of the differences, right, is that they don't have Peeves. You don't really see a lot of the other ghosts. As we see them in the background and so on. But, yeah, the ghosts are largely, you know, shelved, if you will.
I know. It's kind of interesting, too, to, like, look at some of these actors, like, lives before and then after, like Harry Potter too, because it's just to see how it just changes the perception of them and stuff like that. Because like Robbie Coltrane, who plays Hagrid, like before that he was in two of the James Bond movies. He's in Goldeneye and he's in The World Is Not Enough, and so it's just like so weird, like, to in my mind to like think about him, like, because that's where I sort of first think about him, is in like James Bond, then he's Hagrid, and like after that, that's pretty much all he did. I mean, he did like another movie here and there, but like the rest of his life was pretty much like he's still alive obviously, but the rest of his sort of acting career, because he hasn't done anything since he's in like a TV episode here or there, but he hasn't been in a movie since 2014.
Interesting. Let me see here. One more. I keep finding these. I don't know if this is true or not, but they say that Tom Holland was the first choice to play Harry Potter, but he was actually considered too old. Too old, they said. Yeah. And I don't think that's why I'm like this article. I'm like, I don't know. They're like, they said he would just finish doing Billy Elliot and was on the verge of turning 14. So that means that in some, you know, they're kind of making a joke that
There's no way that's right.
I don't know.
Tom Holland is 26 right now.
He's 26. Well, how old is Daniel Radcliffe?
Hold on. 22 minus 1990. Right? Dude, hold on a second.
I'm reading this from
screen. There's no way that's got to be a lie, dude. He was born in 1996.
Yeah, so we got to fact check some of these things because
Daniel Radcliffe is.
Yeah, that's a complete lie. That's a complete
lie.
Daniel Radcliffe is 32.
Like, that's what I thought. He's like our age. Yeah.
I was like, Tom Holland would have been like 4.
Dude, I can show you number
his production
eight.
Started in 1997. Like, it's see, like he would have been two.
Yeah, this is where you have to like back because now I'm questioning all these other things in here. So like,
don't ever trust anything Screen Rant says.
I mean, you would think that you could, right? So let's see a couple other things that they said. And who knows if that Richard Harris thing is true now about like you right. know
Daniel Radcliffe is our age. He was born in 1989.
Right. Because for number five, they have Daniel Radcliffe was the only little boy in the UK who didn't want to be Harry Potter. Who knows if this is true or not? But they say Christopher Columbus saw him in David Copperfield, and he knew that he had found his Harry. But at that point, Daniel had already given up on acting. He didn't want to be an actor anymore. Didn't he audition? You know what I mean?
He would have had to have.
Yeah, Matt's totally out of the. How do you mess up the Tom Holland thing?
Right. Like, So David Copperfield was 1999. So the movie came out in 2001, but obviously productions had to have started years before that. Because when did she release the first book?
Good question. Don't know.
She would have had to have released the first book in. I mean, yeah. When did that first book come out? 1997. So yeah, I mean, the book came out in 1997, the same year in which Tom Holland was born.
Maybe they meant to say too young. That doesn't even make sense. Yeah,
they must have meant to say too. He would have been like 5.
Yeah, exactly. He would have been way too young. Yeah,
that's just something they I don't know, but
they might have just meant to say he was too young, and it says too old though. Swear to God, I can show
I'm
you.
Sure, the- I'm actually sure it does. To be entirely honest,
it's how could Screen Rant be that hit or miss sometimes though? That's ridiculous.
It's just
who's writing for? Let me start writing for him.
Seriously,
if they'll pay me. Yeah, so anyways, okay, so some of those things are probably true. Take a lot of them with a grain of salt, clearly. but yeah. I did read somewhere and not here that Hermione at one point, that Emma did wear kind of front, like for one or two scenes. Like they say Daniel Radcliffe wore some context or whatever for like, this is how the attention to detail they're trying to make them kind of fit the appearance of the other characters or the book characters. He wore like contacts, color altering contacts, and that Emma wore something for her teeth, you know, because Hermione's supposed to have larger front teeth, I guess.
Oh, gotcha. Right? I could see that.
Yeah, so they did that for one or two scenes, and then it just goes away. So that's kind of interesting. I love looking at some of the behind the scenes stuff just to see, you know, how some of this stuff worked or whatever. So,
right. Who do you think has had the best? I'm trying to do some math here and actually see who's, because I think obviously you would immediately think Emma Watson had the best post Harry Potter career.
She really
hasn't done that much in terms of like movies.
She went to college too and stuff. Yeah. So she kind of stopped for a while, didn't she?
So during Harry Potter, she did two other movies, one of which was just a voice. And since then, she hasn't even been in a movie since 2019. She's just sort of like a big public figure. And I think she's like involved in a lot of like political, you know,
right. She's been an ambassador
and
for stuff.
Activism and stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you
probably because she never needs, probably because she literally did all the Harry Potter movies and Beauty and the Beast, and she never needs to act ever again.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
she's probably just breaking. Imagine what her royalty checks look like.
I have I
like no idea.
Yeah, it's wild. Well, because Rupert has continued on a little bit, right? Just he's done a few things. He's done the Apple TV series, which was pretty cool. What else here? He's done quite a few, just TV shows, a lot of TV movies, different things.
Yeah, see, Daniel Radcliffe has actually been in a lot more stuff.
Yeah,
but I don't know. But I don't know that he's been in. He's been in as big as stuff. Although he is in that Weird Al movie that's coming out soon. That's supposed to be pretty good.
Right. He's been trying to branch out and he's an actor. He's a good actor, and he's trying to like kind of break away from the Harry Potter.
Did you know that there's a bunch of like, I mean, there's a lot of rumors stuff like that. Although all these are all the same people that said that Tom Cruise was going to be a variant of Iron Man, but there are a ton of rumors that Daniel Radcliffe is going to be playing a Wolverine variant in the MCU.
That is unbelievable. Bonkers. He's got the hair to do it. Okay, he's got the hair.
But I don't know that he has the guns or the demeanor to do it.
Does he? What if he did?
I just don't.
Is it gonna be super weird to see Harry Potter as Wolverine?
I don't see him as Wolverine. I see him as like a weird Loki like variant, you know, where it's like all these totally weird offshoots, but as like the main. No way, man. I mean, how do you go from Hugh Jackman to Daniel Radcliffe? That makes no sense.
I don't know. Maybe he's doing some major work behind the scenes. Maybe he's bulked up.
He better be doing some serious work.
He's bulked up. He's got the sideburns.
He was in this. What was that movie he was in? God, it was so weird. Or no, it wasn't Daniel Radcliffe, was it? It was I always sometimes in my mind get them mixed up on roles they did at post things because of Frodo. Elijah Wood. Sometimes you get them. Yeah.
Same time. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, you're talking about when he did the weird
soccer movie where they're beating the crap out of
him. Yeah. The hooligans or whatever. Yeah.
That movie's brutal, dude. They put the card in the guy's mouth and like,
I only saw that once and I was like, what the heck?
I never need to see this ever again.
What was the movie? He was Sin City. Wasn't he in Sin City too?
He did have a tiny role in Sin City, which is done by Frank Miller. Is the artist for that who also did 300.
Yeah.
And Batman, The Dark Knight Returns. Those are like his big sort of three major things. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me think here. Another cool. Once they did the reunion thing back in January, Tom Felton was in there. I'm looking at Tom Felton in this as Draco Malfoy. And he's actually gone on and done some TV shows. He was in The Flash there for a while.
Remember he was in that movie we watched where it was like some sort of horror movie where they're like inside this like house and there was like frequency in the, remember he like dies like right at the beginning of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. What was that called? I can't remember what that was, but yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know. I looking at all these guys again, it's just like
the apparition.
The apparition. Hold on. Let me look.
Was the name of that movie? Yeah. With Tom Felton. Yeah, I mean, really, I don't know. It's kind of hard to say who's had the best. Who's had the most post Harry Potter career?
Do you know why?
I guess you'd have to say Emma Watson. I guess
Matt. Yeah, I can't believe he just brought this. The apparition. I totally remember this, and I remember because it had Tom Felton and it had Ashley Greene who plays Alice in Twilight. Right.
In Twilight.
And we were like back in the day, I was sort of like, you know, I'd read the Twilight books, man. I was a reader. I loved reading and watching those shows, movies. That's hilarious. That was a weird movie, actually. That was honestly a scary movie. I'll give it that. But didn't do that well. So yeah. Goodness.
I guess of the kids, I should say, because I think you could definitely make a argument that like a lot of the adults have had better post Harry Potter career. Like obviously, you know, like Maggie Thompson, you could say, you know, and then or Emma Thompson, I should say, obviously is like a huge actress.
Right.
And then Maggie Smith, I mean, she was in Downton Abbey.
She's continued on. Yeah. I mean, again, she got towards the end of her. I mean, she kind of goes in and out of
I think she just like officially retired, didn't she? After this most recent Downton Abbey movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause again, she's had a lot of health issues and different things.
Is that still going on?
I don't know.
Downton Abbey is like over.
Well, Lottie and I are thinking about covering. We're going to cover. So we're going to just go through and watch some of the movies again and do like a rewatch of it and stuff. You know, it's sort of it's British TV, you know, type of thing. Right. So, but yeah, I don't know if it's still, we kind of want to see that movie and see what's up because I love Maggie Smith so much. I mean, I named my cat Professor McGonagall. So I so much I wanted to be, you know, in her class. Thought she was cool. Cool teacher. So, and she's in so many stuff. Okay, I have a fascination with Hook. You know, I love the old movie Hook, and she's right. Wendy. She's Wendy Lady in Hook, and freaking Robin Williams is in that movie. So, like, there's so many. He has so many connections to her and those other movies that they did back in the 90s. It makes total sense why he wanted to be Hagrid. But anyway, yeah, Maggie is awesome. She's been in so many things.
She's Wendy in Hook.
I'm pretty darn sure she is. She is Wendy in Hook. She is Grandma Wendy. Go look at it. She's awesome.
Now I'm not. Now
she's
I'm
in Sister Act. She's the head nun in Sister Act. She's in Little Princess, which my sister loved. What was the other one she was in? Secret Garden, I think she was. No, maybe not Secret Garden. I can't remember. She's in one of those.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's Wendy. And she's always played like an older kind of, you know, they've always aged her up a little bit with makeup and clothing and whatever, you know. So it's funny. She's always been that stern
and
kind
Gwyneth Paltrow played the young version of Wendy in the movie. Wow, crazy.
Yeah, it's so crazy to go back to Gwyneth Paltrow. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to go back and rewatch Hook.
Hook is so
Rufio.
Good.
Rufio.
Oh, did you know this all started because we were again watching Downton Abbey, and we were also Lottie and I were doing the Rebels rewatch over on Hyperspace. By the way, go check out Hyperspace. We're killing it over there, having a great time. We were doing that, and one of the she loves The Last Airbender. The guy that is the voice actor for Zuko is Rufio. No longer does live action. He does voice acting for like Disney and for Nickelodeon and stuff. You're like, what the heck? So wild.
Okay. So, hey, let's go, man. That'll work.
Yeah. Yeah. Rufio. Oh my God.
Crazy. That is wild.
Toodles. Remember old Toodles trying to find his marbles that whole time? Oh my God. So ridiculous. I used to watch that. Here's a connection back to the beginning of this podcast. Instead of being allowed to watch Harry Potter, when Halloween came around, my mom said, "We're making corn dogs. All right. We're making some corn dogs. We're sitting inside and we're watching Hook." And that's what we watched.
Hey, Hook's good.
It was great because I wasn't allowed to trick or treat because there were witches out there. Okay.
So you did that instead.
Yeah, we watched Hook instead. It was a little bit more. That was a better type of fantasy, I guess. Neverland.
Yeah, you know, my mom was pretty anti Harry Potter because it was all about witchcraft, but I just had no desire to read it anyway. We didn't read it. We didn't read it at my school, but I was just like, it just wasn't something that I thought at that point in time. I was all obsessed with, you know, other things. So
yeah, anime and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, wait, because at that time I would have been all about like Dragon Ball, Pokemon, so
video
like,
games,
Harry Potter,
Who cares? And that's the thing, yeah, it just takes time because I wasn't initially until a couple years later when I was old enough to go have some money and you know buy it myself and do whatever. But I it was such a religious sort of Mount Vernon was in an uproar over the fact
that they were
taking the kids. I mean, parents were like calling in, writing into the school, like, what do you got? What's going on? You know, people librarians had to justify why they had it in the building.
I know. I know. And now I read it. I'm like, it's not that.
Of all of
the witchcraft stuff.
There's no satanic. There's no spiritual heaven or hell connections. Nothing. None of that stuff.
I mean, compared to say like The Witcher, I mean, that's like adult. I mean, that's like,
yeah, but like, it shows you how our society is like shifted, you know, in terms of like if Harry Potter came out now, you know, during it just, okay. I know Harry Potter, well, the thing is what moves the dial on that kind of stuff is Harry Potter, Star Wars, you know, as those things come out, people kind of, okay, you know, things shift or whatever, but yeah. I'll never forget that because there wasn't a few kids. There were several kids who were not allowed to go on that trip, and we were all. And I
who else was there with you?
I'm trying to remember because all the popular kids got to go. I definitely did not get to go. I can't remember. I want to say some of their names, but I don't even think you would know them. I don't know. I just remember, I think we were in Mrs. Small or Mr. Newcomer's class, and we just had to stay and work on something else the whole day. We got kind of a free day, you know? So I don't remember all the kids, though. I can't remember who all didn't go because we were quiet. It was a study hall the whole day, and we just kind of – everyone else was having a great time.
Thomas went.
Oh, Tom went. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, hit a bunch of heathens. They went. You know, families were judging each other. You let your kids go to that movie? Really, my mom – I actually had no conversation. I didn't really know what was going on until the day – because, you know, as a kid, you're like – you show up, you're like, where's everybody at? And it was like, oh, yeah, your mom wrote in and said that you can't go. It's like, oh, okay, I didn't know. So, yeah, just weird.
Yeah. Crazy.
I know.
Awesome. All right. Well, that, you know, it's fun to relive. Because the first movie is like we talked about it a bunch. It's kind of like, you know, what's all the stuff surrounding it? What's the...
Yeah. Yep.
We know why it's great.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, we love it. So, it's good stuff.
Absolutely. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, hey, thank you guys, as always, for listening. Thank you for watching. We will be back as we begin Chamber of Secrets.
Let's go.
I read that book in a day.
Yeah.
I blitzed through it. I don't know. It's
blitzing. Yeah.
I blitzed through Chamber. But things Chamber is very similar to Sorcerer's Stone, and then it all takes a real dark turn in Prisoners of Azkaban. Right. But nonetheless, we will be back and we will put whatever chapters we're going to do on the breakdown. So stay tuned for that, guys. And as always, remember to have your wands at the ready.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.